Welcome to the Note to Scene podcast. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And every week we chronicle the biggest news in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. Big news this week from Blink-182. But first, we're going to talk about the story so far and their divisive new record, Proper Dose. Let's go. And so I know we've been ignoring these Neck Deep stories, like the bassist left recently, right? Or somebody left
the There band. Was a member who left the band recently. Yes,
but
I'm
also,
pretty sure it was the bassist.
Okay, but also the Neck Deep drummer, Danny Rain, yo, is now apparently gone solo and is the worst SoundCloud rapper I've ever heard.
It is wow. Like, he's trying really hard and it is not working. This was really wild to see the reaction to, especially on Rock Sound, because Rock Sound have a very direct Neck
yeah.
Deep audience
on
very, their socials.
Very, 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 I mean, fucking cuddly.
UK,
Rock Sound and Neck Deep.
Yeah, UK.
Many Rock Sound covers have gone to Neck Deep.
Totally. So it was interesting to see this response, because I woke up on my Feedly app, and the Feedly app will show you which stories are taking off on socials as far as reaction go. And this one had the fire symbol next to it Friday morning. And I was like, there's no way, man. I am not doing this right now. This song is... it's something, man. It almost reminds me of like a bad Modesty Yahoo. Do you remember that
guy?
Remember that guy?
God. Jesus, I'm so glad he's gone. I remember when it was like news that Modest Yahoo and Chiodos got added to Warped, like
right?
08.
Right.
And I was like, get this guy out of the fucking headline.
Get
the fuck out of here.
Right.
Like, he's as big as Chiodos. That was a gimmick.
Dude, he had a song. He had a song
whatever.
For like the Olympics.
Okay.
It was
anyways,
like one day.
Danny Rain, it's bad. It was funny. I just wanted to bring it up. It's fun.
Yeah, solid 15,000 views on YouTube.
I mean, mad support, though, in the comments.
Dude, it's out there. Dude, like, it's fucking out there.
From the Neck Deep fans, they're like...
On Spotify.
Yeah.
Sickest
oh,
thing I've seen since Neck Deep's cover of Torn, which
kids,
also we didn't even talk about.
Real SoundCloud rap, kids. I know it hasn't hit in the UK quite yet.
Right?
The way it has
yeah.
LA.
Yeah.
Come over. Come talk to Note to Scene. We got stuff to show you. Okay.
Right.
All right. Let's knock out some listener questions.
Let's do it.
All right. Our first question comes in from friend of the show, Brandy Hayden. Brandy writes in to notetoscene@gmail.com. Brandy says, so I understand that this is super low on the scene importance scale, but can we talk about Danny Stillman's trajectory for a minute? 2006 Drop Dead Gorgeous was important. Like, what song title sums up MySpace more than Dressed for Friend Requests? And I even enjoyed the later, much more mellow, Bleach Blonde project. This 888 project has been trying to get off the ground for a year, and they're finally releasing an actual collection of songs. The first single, Missing You, I thought was really good. And then everything else so far sounds too overproduced and just messy to me. Anyway, curious of your thoughts on it all. First off, big shouts to Brandy.
Yeah.
Brandy was one of my writers at AP when I was running altpress.com. And she's a great writer, and you should read everything she writes.
Hell yeah.
But it's interesting, 888 getting brought up. So these are the Drop Dead Gorgeous guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including the front man. And this is sort of their radio rock band project they're doing now. And it was interesting that Brandy brought it up, because when I think of Note to Scene, like the formative kind of couple months leading up to Note to Scene, like this band kind of played a weird big part, because you put me on to 888.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea who they were. But that single, Critical Mistakes, was cooking at Alt Radio.
Dude.
And that song was heat.
Summer 2016, because they announced it that spring. They announced 888. I remember writing about it at Alt Press.
It makes sense, because that we launched January 2017, so we were probably...
Right. We were talking about it while we were listening to all this
shit.
This
was one of those conversations where we were like, this should be on a podcast.
And, totally.
But yeah, that Critical Mistake, I just remember listening to that Critical Mistake song that whole summer, kind of leading up to Note to Scene. And I was thoroughly impressed with how much radio play it was getting. And then they disappeared off the face of the earth. And yeah, Missing You is okay. Like, they seem to have the right idea.
Yeah.
Heatstroke, like, kind of gets there. They went full dark pop, which is usually the good move. But I don't know. It's like, do you think, Tyler, like, was Critical Mistakes kind of just lightning in a bottle? And is this band going to fade? Or is
there... I've been so disappointed with everything they've dropped since that Critical Mistakes EP, because literally every song on that release was, I thought, was great. Critical Mistakes, Seattle Rain, Decades, Young and in Love.
And for Drop Dead Gorgeous singer to have a hit alt radio single, that's amazing in
Absolutely.
2016, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I thought that project was going to be massive, because after that they signed to Island. Which,
yeah,
you know,
they're on a major
Fall Out
label.
Boy. Yeah, like they're getting a full push. But I see it on their socials. I see it in their streams. Like, there's just not enough attention there. And there's something missing in the songs.
There's no bass. Like, there's no solid fan base there.
Right. There's a spark that's missing in pretty much every song that they've released since that first EP. And it's really bumming me out, because I really wanted to root for this band to be like, kind of, you know, just maybe slide into that 21 Pilots stream and get some momentum going. But I was bummed at the material since Critical Mistakes. But if you're down to fuck with, you know, ex Drop Dead Gorgeous members in 2016, that EP is fire. And this is also the reason why we haven't gotten any 10-year shit for Drop Dead Gorgeous, because these guys are trying to be massive all over again.
And, I mean, you can't blame them. You get a shot on a major,
dude,
Island record,
of
Justin
course.
Bieber. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you take that shot. I don't
Absolutely.
Blame
them. Absolutely.
So, shouts to Brandy for writing in. Go read Brandy, especially if she is writing about All Time Low. Go read it. Our next question comes in from listener Jordan K., who writes in a note to scene@gmail.com. Jordan says, "Hi guys, love the show and was wondering what you guys thought of the new Amity Affliction. I was a huge fan of Chasing Ghosts, but the new stuff is going into some weird electro rock sound. Thanks, Jordan." T-Sharp, you want to take this one away?
So the Amity is really interesting to talk about in 2018, or not, like, or completely not interesting to talk about. This band was, they never really got out of mid-tier metalcore size in the U.S.
They had that moment, though,
sure,
of powerhouse metalcore.
Sure.
Like,
yep.
I want to say 2014, 2015.
And 2015, and 2016, and ever since
they
then.
They were kind of a powerhouse.
Right, for sure. They were able to compete with, like, you know, the Motionless
the
and
Crown
Whites.
The
Yeah, the Crown the Empire. The 20,000 first week crowd, even though their biggest first week, if I'm not mistaken, is
it was
only
over
14.
10.
Yeah, yeah, it's 14.
That's solid, though, for a metalcore band.
Totally, especially, and they're not even from here. They're from Australia.
Right.
So, and over in Australia, they're, you know, they co-headline with A Day to Remember. So, like, right, they're fine.
I mean, they're huge over there. Yeah,
totally.
But it's just
totally
a matter of the U.S. conversation.
Yeah, so this album, like our listener pointed out, is very electronic bass. And here's what I'll say about it. I said this to a friend who I was talking to about the album. I would rather see a band attempt to evolve and fail than have a band do the exact same thing and continue to decline. You know, like, I would much rather see a band try to do something different and completely miss the mark than have a band release the same album, you know, five times. So
yeah,
this largely missed the mark. I will say, if you just like a, you know, kind of streamlined post-hardcore song, go check out Doomsday. Great song, great single. It's such an easy listen. It's nothing overly special, but it's a solid track for sure. There's some other songs on that record that are just, I like give them so much props for trying, but
mm-hmm,
it's so obvious that it doesn't work.
I'm kind of with you. This record flopped hard, if I'm
oh,
not mistaken,
way,
right? I
way
mean, they're just, like you said, take the shot and fail. This is the definition of it, right? Like, they took the shot and they're not selling anything over here anymore.
No,
like,
I can't even remember what this did first week.
It charted at, like, I think 170.
Oh,
so that's not a good sign. I mean, you know, we're probably talking 3.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, 3K, for sure.
Somewhere around there. But yeah, I like Doomsday. On that song, they transition pretty well from metalcore to a rock band. I think like that's a solid rock song. Mm-hmm. Like, I think on that song they're actually like doing Beartooth better than Beartooth on that chorus. Mm. The rest of the record though is kind of meh. You know,
Yeah. It kind of gets all over the place, especially when like "Feels Like I'm Dying" comes on. Like,
yeah, that song kind of annoyed me,
dude. I was like, oh my god, like I love this on paper, but the execution is so off. If you want to hear an attempt at a top 40 EDM chorus in a rock song, check that out, or don't. The record did 7,000 first week. Last one did 13, so they basically dropped in half.
Faster, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they basically dropped in half.
Yeah, pretty bad. Okay, we thank Brandy and Jordan for writing in a note to cnet@gmail.com. If you have any questions, feel free to send them that way, and we will happily discuss them on the show. But Tyler Sharp, it's time to move into our main story this week. It's time to put the gloves on, son.
Ready to go a couple rounds, Matt?
I don't know how this one's going to go, man, to be honest.
I know how it's going to fucking go.
The story so far's new album, Proper Dose, is out this week. I think it's coming out Friday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this coming Friday.
It has been quite controversial, with some fans revolting. And we're going to talk about this record and break it down and give our opinions. Tyler Sharp, you've been carrying this banner, you know, Battle of Bastards. You're running through the army, leading the charge here. What are your thoughts on Proper Dose?
This is probably the most streamlined pop punk album we've gotten since Life's Not Out to Get You. It's such an easy listen, front to back. The songs flow so well together. There's filler, but it doesn't really feel like filler because it's literally just like ear candy. It's very, you know, it's the only way I could compare it to like Ariana Grande's new album is that it's such an easy listen. Like there's no dissonance in this album. There's such a sheen over it. And I know that's what people hate about it. You know, the auto tune and Parker's vocals, the layers. It's like Story So Far lost their edge. It's such an enhancement of their song. It's progression. It's evolution. It's okay, people. Like this band can sound like this. This isn't a problem. The songs are still so fire. Like I don't understand what all the backlash is. So to get into some of the songs, I mean, to start off, they re-recorded Out of It, and I kind of like it more. Like the production of it has less of a sheen, which is weird because most of the record has more of it. But like there's resonance in that snare hit on that drum kit, you know, like it feels a little bit more alive, feels a little bit more loose. Like the knots aren't all tied together as much. Parker's vocals definitely sound like they have more of a sheen to it, which is kind of funny. It's like the opposite of the rest of the song. But there's the second song on the record, Keep This Up. That is probably the best song on the whole record. It starts off with like this Blink-182 type riff, and then it just kicks in 4 on the floor and rides the whole song. Mm-hmm. It's only like 2.5 minutes, which just ups the replay value so fucking much. I've probably listened to that song 20, 30 times in the past 24 hours. It's so easy to just have it on repeat and listen to it 5 times in a row and not even realize it. It's a good pump-up jam. Title track, Proper Dose, great intro to the record. Like, it's just solid Story So Far moments that really comprise this album, but they feel like they're cleaner. Like, it feels like it's more cohesive. It feels like it's a little bit more grown up. It feels like it's just a very easy listen. There's a couple acoustic tracks. It does tend to wane towards like the second half of the record, but altogether, like it's such a solid pop punk album front to back. Like there's no like, oh, this, you know, it starts to get weird at this point. The songs flow so well together. They have such a like relation to one another. It just fits. It's like a puzzle piece almost. So I love this record. It's my pop punk album of the year. Not that it had any contenders, but it's pretty much the only pop punk album of the year at this point. So I am at an 8.5 out of 10 on proper dose. I'm so happy that this record is coming. I'm so pissed off that everyone is so fickle about it, and you're all fucking wrong. And I already know what you're gonna say about it, Matt, so
All right, well, let's calmly try to get through my we got you on tape. Let's calmly try to get through my thoughts, and then we can kind of we'll slam it out.
I'm walking out. All right.
I did not like this album. This was a tough listen for me. But only because it was boring. It was not a brutal listen, which is what I was expecting. So it actually turned out a little better. I really thought like I was just gonna be like, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this. I was more just bored the whole time. Like, to me, the album is confusing, it's dizzying, and mostly it's just boring AF. I was glad that they didn't really fuck with Out of It too much. You know, when I saw that they were going to when I saw that on the track list and I saw it was re-recorded, I was like, oh shit, you know, because I could already hear the neutered version where they put Parker's squeaky "Let It Go" vocals on it, and I was like, "Please, please don't do that." So I was glad, and that was a Lucy we got before the summer, right? You know, so I mean, that's you just got to take that into consideration. But I didn't hate it as much as I thought I did. "Keep This Up" is a good song. I love the energy. I love the bouncy guitar. I love Parker's high range. Being used correctly in this case. I think it's got a murderous pre-chorus. Using a guitar as your chorus was that's a bit disappointing to me. You gotta be real good to pull that off, and I don't know that it just punches all the way where the chorus needs to go, but it's a good song though. "Keep This Up" and "Out of It" are really the only good songs on this record. You can just toss the rest for me. "Let It Go" is a distant third place for me, which isn't saying much. But I guess you could take that one too. "Proper Dose," you know, almost works as a basic Story So Far song, but it's just not quite as special as some of the earlier stuff. Songs that should have been scrapped in pre-production: "Take Me As You Please," "Upside Down," "If I Fall," "Need to Know," and "Line" and "Growing on You." I feel like "Lightyear" could have been saved with some more workshopping and thought put into the songwriting process and a better production job. It's just such a weird trip of weird Parker vocals and fake acoustic guitar that just feels like one long song they wrote while they were high. I come to a 5 out of 10.
5 out of 10. Oh my God. Like, I just fell out of my fucking chair. Dude, all right. First off, Take Me As You Please is the most breezy, easy listening song of all
I
time.
hate it, man. I
You're
hate
so fucking wrong.
it. I
Like,
think it's
how
one of
much
the worst
you
on the
can,
record.
dude, it's so simple. It's like hating any other acoustic song. What,
It's
like,
just so
what you
dumb
have,
and cheesy.
this is un
Fake
This is
music, Tyler.
undeserved
It's fake
rage.
music.
It's undeserved rage. Like, this song is 100% coherent. It's fucking like acoustic late 2000s MySpace ear candy, man.
I mean, they can play guitar. I'll give them that. Like, they know how to play their instrument. But I
There's no
just.
reason to be so angry about a fucking
It's just
acoustic song.
stupid. I was so stupid. I mean, maybe the fact that it's about weed, it's just so dumb. I'm like, why am I listening to this?
I
It's
mean,
just.
I don't associate it to weed. You could associate it to other things, you know, like
Sure.
it's interpretable. Oh my goodness. This song, like, this album does not deserve this attack. Like, it's so undeserved. It's so unreasonable the response that it's getting, because like these songs are so coherent.
I just, like I said, dizzying and just confusing to me the whole time. It's like I'm just disoriented during the whole listen. And the vocals are so weird and off. And some songs are overly produced, and then some songs sound like some of these songs. There's one song, I can't remember which one, but it sounds like a fucking Knuckle Puck song. Like, it's that
No,
bad. I'm like, come on, dude. No. You're like, no, don't you bring.
no.
You're like,
Do
don't bring
not
those savages
associate
into
this
this.
record to anything that Knuckle Puck has ever done. This is if this was a different pop punk band, if this was a complete, you know, like not the story so far, not anyone we know, I don't think it would get this much hate. It'd be like, oh, hey, like this is kind of sick. This is like the story so far, but it's like a little different. But because it's the story so far, it's not what people want from them.
I just don't like this music. I think it's bad music. And, you know, this is probably the furthest we've been apart. Like, you're at an 8.5 and I'm at a 5. I don't think we've ever. And this is just that area where music is subjective. And, you know, our professional sort of understanding of music can only go so far. And this is sort of one of the albums where we're just not, you know, we're nowhere near close or reconciling.
God, man,
it's like such a weird trip of an album to me.
I'm glad the rest of the record got you to come around a little bit on Let It Go, but
yeah,
gosh, like, man.
I mean, hey, I mean, you know, like out of it. That's an 8 out of 10. That's a jam, you know?
I don't think the rest of this record is that, like it is different, but it all fits together. Like, that song fits on this album.
It was really unpleasant. Like, most of the meat of the record no. was really unpleasant for me. Keep This Up is a good song. I got one good song out of it, you know? Did you see Parker's interview with Kerrang?
I saw that he didn't. I didn't really read any of it.
So he basically revealed that the reason we've been waiting this long is he was locked up in an apartment doing cough syrup and painkillers.
Well, you know, I hope he's better.
I mean, I think he's better now. But
I hope my boy's better.
After hearing this record, I'm not surprised. Like, dude, I'm just going to say that.
It's not, like, dissonant. You act like it's, like, this difficult listen. It's so fluid. How like you can listen to this thing front to back, no problem. It blends well. It's cohesive.
At some point it starts to sound like one song to me. One song of just these faux acoustic guitars and Parker's high-pitched vocals that are overproduced.
They're not even like high-pitched. They're good melodies. They're good melodies. Like his deliveries, I mean, obviously they did things to his vocals. They switched their approach up. They switched their the way they finalized their songs. That's great. Like, it fucking works, man. It's still got the core values of the Story So Far songs that we grew up loving.
Gotta disagree, man. So I was looking for reviews of the record. I just got to call out Depth Magazine real quick. They wrote this really glowing review of the record. And I just want to say, guys, like, just because the band's publicist sent you an advance of the record doesn't mean you need to write an ornate review trying to cast this album as something elegant. Like, this review goes as far as to make an argument for Line. You know Line is bad, Tyler. That doesn't need to be on the record.
That's the interlude song, right?
But then it kicks up with vocals.
Yeah, but it's just an interlude song. It's just like the song on like Post Malone's record. You know, it's just there as a connector piece. It's like a bridge.
That's my point, though, is you don't need to be making arguments for Line.
Sure,
like,
no.
If you're going to make your arguments.
Yeah, that's not a song, you know.
I don't mean to come out call out young music writers, but that was the only review available, and I was just blown away reading this ornate piece where they just like talk about this beautiful record.
1 week away, and we got one review out.
I know.
Okay, this is so sad. This is literally why the scene is ending. This is why. Y'all just can't accept it. You know, back in the day, man, as long as it wasn't outrightly atrocious, we were like, all right, man, this is fire. Like, bands just, they did what they did and we were about it. Like, this is good music and y'all are just pissing it away because it's not what you want.
Let's talk sales, Tyler.
I don't want to talk sales.
Well, it's interesting because it's coming out on Pure Noise again. Mm-hmm. So that's not great. Because
right.
that label's
already
not happy.
Off on a bad foot.
The last record, but you got the 4-year wait, right? Or 3-year? It's been a long time. I think that goes in the band's favor. Like, so this has been the most anticipated pop punk album for sure. So for I think sure. that's in their favor.
For sure.
Self-titled, the last record, did 23,000 first week. That's huge. So where are you coming with sales here, my man? What do you think they can do?
Again, the best thing that they ever did, apparently, on this whole cycle, is drop the pre-orders before they released any songs. So they were able to get quite a few, I'm hoping, off the good graces of the hype and the last record and the wait and all that. I was, a little worried that they had, like, the Pierce the Veil effect, you know, waited too long, and they obviously didn't deliver according to their fan base. So pre-orders, I'm sure, have halted since they've been releasing new music. So it really all depends on what they did when the announcement came and when all that shit went live. I'm going to say, like, 13.
Okay.
That's where I'll say. If it's above 10, I'll be happy. If it's below 10, I'm out. I'm done. No more podcasts.
I'm thinking people are pissed. Like, fans are pissed, but there's still the story so far. They've got a lot of girl fans, which we've talked about before on the show. Girl fans are the best fans to have because they buy everything. This is a girl favorite band. Mm-hmm. And I think even though the fans are pissed, I think they're still going to show out. You know, obviously the negative reception of the songs is going to affect. I was thinking 15 to 18. I'm going to go 17,000 wow. first week. That's where I see it coming.
You don't think this
a little bit of a dip.
This egregious backlash is going to dip them that much?
You know, I just think there's still the story so far, and what other option do pop punk kids have right now? And, like, you know, their girl fan base is really loyal to them. Like, they really, you know, I think while a lot of the male fans have been outspoken and loud, you know, on Facebook and shit, I think the girl fans are just quietly buying the record and still love Parker.
I mean, I hope so. Like, Let It Go finally passed 1 million streams. Upside Down and Take Me As You Please are both at 700,000 and 600,000. So, I mean, it's not great at all, but we'll see. I hope it's around where you got them at, because that'll give them some good tour opportunities on the cycle. Whole lot better than 13 will.
Anything else you want to add to the story so far, Tyler Sharp?
Go stream that shit, because y'all are wrong. All right. Y'all are wrong.
All right. Let's move on to our next story, which is We Came As Romans. We Came As Romans announced that they will continue as a band without late singer Kyle Pavone, who passed away recently due to a drug overdose. And last episode, we kind of speculated, or two episodes ago, we speculated as to, like, what the move was for the band. But David came out on a Facebook video and said, quote, "We've decided that the best course of action for the band is to do the Bullet for My Valentine tour. We feel like this honors Kyle, and we can talk about his foundation, the Kyle Pavone Foundation, and carry on doing what he would have wanted us to do, and us be on stage together on stage, playing music together with our fans. We will not be replacing Kyle. We will be continuing on with the five of us." Tyler Sharp, what do you think about this? First, I gotta say, it's pretty cool of David to come out on video like that, you know?
Totally.
It's one thing to, like, really put a statement out, but that takes, you know, after going through such a tragedy, and to really intimately address your fans in a video like that, like, I gotta give props for that to David, you know? Especially something that you could take heat for like this.
Yeah.
You
know? It's a very personable announcement.
Yeah.
Way to
really
connect with
fans. I appreciated that as, you know, a fan of the band.
Definitely good for them, man. Like, I'm happy for them. I'm glad that they feel comfortable enough to continue the band. They started the foundation, you know, with, like, Kyle's parents and stuff, so that's gonna be a big kind of cornerstone as far as their purpose goes moving forward as a band. There's gonna be a shit ton of people at those Bullet for My Valentine shows, man.
Definitely
probably more so than there were before. So if you're going to those shows, like, soak it up. That's going to be a real emotional experience, I'm sure, for not only the band, but everyone
that's
there.
I wouldn't be shocked if you see, like, Vic Fuentes, Tyler Carter.
Yeah, like, some guests
come out and do some cleans. Like, you might be in for that, for the live show. Thinking about the band and this decision, I instantly thought about their career, and I'm like, there's two moves here for the band with David as the front man. Go really heavy, which will take them nowhere, right? Because it's just coming to an end. Metalcore is over. Or the radio rock pivot. They could kind of do that with David, don't you think?
Well, yeah, because he was already ushering in his own clean vocals on the last record.
He could do a rougher radio rock kind of clean vocal with occasional screams, you know, like Caleb Chomo does, or like that Amity record does.
Totally. I mean,
they got to move.
The door is in front of them. It's up to them to take that.
Every other fucking band's doing it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Spine Farm's the right home for them.
Is that where they are right now?
Sharp Tone. I get those two mixed up all the time. Either way, I don't think Sharp Tone is the right place for radio
push. No radio connections at all. So they'd have to, I mean, they'd have to at least get on a Fearless.
Yeah.
You know, be a Concord or, shit, man, Epitaph.
Fucking 11-7.
It's just a low. No, right. I'm not subjecting them to 11-7. That label has ruined too many bands I like. Right. But, you know, I mean, obviously, Red Bull or Roadrunner aren't going to take them. You know, they're just, it's the thing, is a label going to invest in them at this point to help them make that pivot? Is it worth it? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
The back catalog's strong. So, you know, there's an incentive for a label, you know?
Right. I hope all the best for them, man. Like, I'm happy for them that they're comfortable enough to continue on. And I hope it's as big as it can possibly be for them.
So, Matt Skiba recently did an interview with Bill Mord. We learned a few key important things about Blink-182 from this interview. One, so Blink-182 were already in the studio with John Feldman, again, working on the follow-up to California. Two, they've already written a bunch of, quote, great stuff for a, quote, album. Three, because of Travis's health issues, they had to pretty much pump the brakes, and now they're not sure when or how they will get back to recording this record. So, again, here we are with Blink. Another roadblock.
Yeah, it's just, it's so sad, man. Like we talked about, I mean, it was just when Travis got diagnosed with the blood clots, like, you just knew it wasn't going to be over in July. You know, like, you knew that it was, that's just serious, and there's no way you can just bounce back, like, in a couple weeks. It's just, it's not going to happen. There's long-lasting effects, unfortunately. And I can't imagine what it's like for him, because he hasn't been able to be behind a kit now for, what, like, 3 months? That's probably the longest time since he was, you know, in fucking, like, middle school, since he hadn't been behind a kit.
It'll come back to him, though.
Yeah.
I mean, full stop.
For sure. So, but, like, I mean, we're probably not even looking maybe late 2019 for a Blink album.
What's interesting to me is that they, obviously, the record went gold, you know, number one single, number two single, a big success. They wanted to do this again. You know what I mean? This is kind of the takeaway here. They weren't going to wait around for Tom. They weren't going to wait around for anything. You know, they were going to let Matt get his little trio album out real quick that no one gave a shit about. And and they were going to do it again. It's just what a weird turn of events that we go from waiting, God, 7-8 years for a Blink record. We get one, it's great, and then we're going to get one, you know, 2 years later. And now, because of Travis's health issues, which are not to be fucked with, I think, protect Travis. That is a note to scene. That's a note to scene coffee mug coming to you soon.
Protect Travis.
He's a national treasure. And it's just been such a roller coaster, you know?
Up and down, and we're just down.
And
right
the
now.
Fact that they're working with Feldman again. So this was probably going to be very California-esque.
For sure. I mean, like, we knew that new Blink stuff had, they were in the process of it, you know, like, for a minute now. So I'd be interested to see how far along they got before Travis got diagnosed. Like, how much drums did they track?
Obviously, since they've stopped now, the whole record hasn't been written and they haven't recorded all the drums, but I'd be interested to see exactly how far they got, but we'll just see. I mean, like, it might not be until 2020 before we get this record,
which is kind of, I'm kind of okay with, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's Blink. I'm used to waiting, but John Feldman, man, that guy, like,
never stops.
Just sunk his teeth into pop punk. Like, he's now just attached to Blink. You know what I mean? Like,
inherently.
He's the fourth member.
And honorary fourth member.
He jumped on that Five Sauce train when it was cooking, remember?
Yep.
And that guy, man, it's just like, maybe let some other producers eat, John, you know? So, shouts to the Billboard interviewer, though, for asking the Blink question, because this was an Alkaline Trio interview in Billboard, and you know, we've all been in that situation as journalists where you got to slip that question and that the guy doesn't want to answer. You know, this is about Trio. He doesn't want to talk about Blink. And you just know the look Skiba gave this guy when he asked him the Blink question. Because, you know, it's like it's supposed to be about Trio, but then Skiba answers one question about Blink in the interview. And then the headline is, you know, Blink postponed album. And now the Trio guys are upset because they want to be written up in Billboard. And they go read it. And they're like, dude, Skiba, like, this whole thing's about Blink. And he's like, look, the interviewer asked me, what do you want me to do? And the label's mad because, you know, this was supposed to promote the Trio album, but now it's just all about Blink. So it's a, you got to pull the trigger when you're the journalist, you know, you got to ask, get us that Blink info, you know?
Totally.
That's a shout.
And to Billboard's credit, they did bury it. That's why no other website picked
it
up.
Didn't stop it from getting out though. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's still there.
We're going to talk about it. Let's move on to our next story, which is Architects, British metalcore heroes. They announced their eighth album. Wow. It's called Holy Hell, and they released a new single called Hereafter. Tyler Sharp, you want to take this one away? What are your thoughts on the new Architects single?
First off, I'm so stoked we get to talk about Architects on the show. Like, hell yeah. This band has burned really well as like a metalcore juggernaut. Like, they have so much cred. They always deliver. They went through the tragedy of losing Tom a couple years back, and this is the first.
I totally forgot about that.
I mean, what's sad is that when Kyle passed, we all was like, where was the last, you know, like, when was the last scene death? And we all just went to Mitch because it was like a frontman syndrome kind of thing.
They've never been so big in the U.S., you know?
Right. I mean, like, exactly. The last album, All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us, sold, I think, like 5,500 here first week. But they can play Wembley Arena in the U.K., no problem.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So, like, unfortunately, the carryover isn't as much in the States. But, like, they do have a fan base here. And they are able to play, you know, like, House of Blues and stuff like that. But so stoked that this band has been able to evolve following Tom's death, because that was just a wild whirlwind that nobody saw coming outside of the band, you know. So to watch them play some of those first shows without Tom, or just like that was emotional. Even, you know, I couldn't imagine what it was like being in the band, but just as a fan. And then they released Doomsday last year, which was just this fucking fire metalcore track. That was my metalcore song of the year last year. It's such a, on this new song as well as on that one, because Doomsday is on the new album, they're reaching like this point of like, it's almost ambient metalcore, but it's more straightforward. It's like this point of severe elevation. Like, they take this shit to the next level, and they keep it heavy, but like these choruses where they have Sam, like, he's singing, but like he's shouting, but there's,
it's
actually
like he kicks up his scream into a sort of a shout range, and it goes from like 5,000 feet cruise level to 50,000
feet,
you know,
mean, just
stratosphere,
sky high. And like he's got melody in this delivery, and
it keeps melody in the scream, which is very impressive.
It's so unique, and like it's such a signature move for him over the last, like, you know, three Architects records. And it's so cool to see them be able to deliver something.
Cannot be good for your throat. Like, that
I
thing,
know.
It's got a shelf life, but it's cool.
Right. Yeah. But he's managed to deliver it time and time again. So it's really cool to hear it on this song. It kicks off in like this very melodic, very straightforward, mellow melody, and then the verse kicks in and it goes straight into signature kind of Architects metalcore, and then the chorus just goes sky high. And that lyric, "I've been fighting with broken bones," like just hits the fuck home, man. Like AP needs to do some listicle about like the 10, the most emo metalcore bands or some shit. Like
So,
Architects would be at the top, but this song is
where do you
really
come in?
cool. I've listened to it so many times. I'm at an 8 out of 10.
Banger Nation?
Dude, I've this is this record's gonna be on my
Wow.
album of the year list. I can already tell because
Oh,
All Our
sick.
Gods has been
Okay.
was on mine in 2016 or 2015 when it came out. Very
So they
excited.
have 500,000 Spotify monthly listeners, which is very impressive for a metalcore band, especially a UK one. And then the song already has 500,000 spins on Spotify, which is impressive because that means your audience is literally 100% loyal. Like all of their listeners streamed the song. They are literally, their audience is literally 100 AF, like straight up. And I've always thought they were a pretty decent band. Like there's a certain intensity that separates them from the pack of standard metalcore bands. Sam Carter is just a great screamer, and I've always had hope, but hope that they never really fully delivered on for me. They never had much commercial success in the US, but you can hear that they're you can hear what professional musicians they are. You can hear that next level of talent in their instrumentation and Sam's vocals. They're kind of like a Parkway Drive meets Alexis on Fire meets early Bring
Totally.
Me
Hell
mashed
yeah.
up, you know.
Parkway
With
meets Alexis. I like
yeah,
that.
kind of, you know what I
I
mean?
like
And
that.
I really like Match Made in Heaven, and I really like Naysayer, which is my favorite song
Oh,
by them.
Naysayer's so fire.
I usually don't find metalcore I like these days. And I gotta say, Hereafter is just okay for me.
Oh,
Yeah,
man.
I'm at like a 6, 6.5 out of 10. It's competent metal. I don't think I'll spin it again though. There's really it it's there's not much new here for me in terms of their discography. And I think it doesn't really hold a candle to some of their better songs. So, I mean, shouts to Epitaph Records for keeping the culture alive, I guess, but it's okay. I hope they do well. I like this band. The song's okay.
I felt like it pushed the Architects' boundaries in the right ways. Like there was a very specific sound on All Our Gods and a specific sound on Lost Forever, Lost Together. And I honestly, when I got, because I was at AP when All Our Gods came out, and I got the advance, and I was like, this really doesn't feel like they're pushing anything from Lost Forever. And I loved Lost Forever. Like you said, Naysayer, holy shit. Like that song comes out swinging so fucking hard. And then on All Our Gods Have Abandoned Us, they have the intro track's called Nihilist. And it's like the exact same intensity. And it just rips your fucking face off. And I grew to love that album pretty much within a couple weeks of it coming out. And Architects really cemented themselves as, like I said, that cred metal band who we know is always gonna deliver. And Hereafter, I feel like I said, it pushes the boundaries in the right way. Like this doesn't feel like it could be on All Our Gods, but it still feels like an Architects song. And like that's the best thing a band can do when they're delivering the follow-up to whatever they released previously. So I think it's really cool to see them experiment a little bit more. It's not necessarily your most traditional metalcore song, but yeah, you still know that it's Architects.
It definitely sounds like an Architects song. It's just for me, it's just missing that spark that I've always wanted that I feel like would take them to the next level. It's just not there for me.
You didn't like These Colors Don't Run? That was the song that really catapulted them. I remember the day that dropped and I was like, oh my God. Like I got friends back home the day that song dropped. It was the middle of summer, like 2013 or 2014, I can't remember, but we skated to that song all day the day it dropped.
All right, well, let's move on, Tyler Sharp, to some late night television. Did you see Good Charlotte perform on Corden with a motherfucking Dr. Phil?
When the scene when what we love starts turning into a joke, that's when we know it's over.
Yeah.
This thing was whatever, man. Like, it was like this weird fucking moment that no one ever thought would happen. But again, like, I take it back to a day to remember in Creed at the APMAs. Like, a day to remember thought that shit was fucking hilarious. And when you don't even have your own bands taking this shit seriously, like, it's fucking over, man. It's done. That's kind of how I've perceived this whole thing. It was just a massive eye roll. Like, this is so unnecessary.
I thought, I agree with you. I thought Corden was funny, at least. Like, he's just a funny guy, you know? Him just being
sometimes,
funny.
Sometimes.
And not just having them do a boring performance or promote the album, you know? Like,
for sure.
Actually kind of made news, kind of worked for them. You just probably would have been better off having Good Charlotte do a carpool karaoke, right?
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
That
yeah, totally.
The Dr. Phil thing is funny to me because I can do some moves here and I can connect note to scene to Dr. Phil real quick.
Oh boy.
Story time, right? So I'm a young music journalist. I'm not even a journalist yet. I'm in college. I haven't started working at AP yet, which if you know my career trajectory, I eventually got a job. I was an intern at AP. Then I became a writer. Then I became an editor running the site. And then Tyler joined and became like my right-hand guy. And we ran that shit. And it was awesome and so much fun. But way before all that success, I was just a nobody independent journalist out there just blogging for whoever I could and interviewing, you know, whatever bands I could. And when you're a journalist like that, I know some of you who listen to the show, you want to get into the music industry and you want to interview bands and do all that stuff. Kind of one of your first things you want to do is interview as many bands as possible. And you gradually kind of work your way up to bigger and bigger and bigger bands until you have like sort of a resume of, hey, I've interviewed all these bands. So what I used to do was, this is kind of before I think like the Bands in Town app, but what I used to do is I had every venue in my city, I had their website bookmarked, and every month I checked their schedule and I'd see what bands were rolling through, because usually when a band's in town, they want to do some kind of local press. And, you know, if you're a nobody journalist, they're not going to want to work with you if they're a big band. But some days, like, just the local paper doesn't want to write about them. The radio doesn't want to have them on. Mm-hmm. So you luck out and you can get a big band if you're smart. And as you interview these bands, you develop relationships with their publicist, and you can kind of get into the system. So you need to be out there hustling if you want to be a journalist, you know, music journalist. Start early. But the main point here, so I'm doing this. I think at the time, the biggest band I had interviewed was Amberlin. This is like early blogging days. And yeah, I was like, yo, I interviewed Amberlin. And then, like, I would use that when I would interview bands' publicists. I was like, check this out. Mm-hmm. And I check, I think it was like October or something. I check for the month, see who's coming through. It's a light month. No one's coming through. But Flyleaf is coming through.
Ooh.
And I'm like, yeah, and I'm like, okay, long shot, right? Because it's Flyleaf, you know what I mean? I mean,
right.
Major label, platinum selling band. I go through all of my contacts. I don't know their publicists. I have no link to the band anyway. I don't know their management. So they're on A&M Octone Records at the time. And, you know, I send a cold email, right? Just a cold call. I just send a cold email to A&M Records,
mm-hmm.
expecting to hear nothing back. So I send the email to them. I'm like, you know, I'm like, what's up? You know? And I didn't think I was gonna hear anything back. But like 2 hours later, I get an email back from A&M Records and they're like, what's up? And I'm like,
no
what's
shit.
Up? You know what I mean? And
no
it's like,
shit.
Yeah. And little did I know at the time, A&M was falling apart behind mm-hmm. the scenes and in the process of imploding, but they were still part of the Interscope, Geffen, A&M center that was running Universal Music at the time.
Right.
So they were still powerful, but turns out this really pricey sort of innovative PR firm was doing Flyleaf's publicity for them. The record label was not. So they sent me to the record label's PR team, and they come at me like, they're like, hey man, we totally are down for you to interview Flyleaf. And I'm like, no way. You know what I mean?
No
I'm like,
way.
This is legit. And I'm like, this will be the biggest band I've ever interviewed. And, you know, I'm in college. I'm like, I don't know how, 20, 19. And but he's like, but I got a request for you. Could you also interview the opening band? They're called Stars in Stereo. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, yes, without even looking up who they are, because when you gotta, you know what I mean? You gotta crawl through that mud.
You gotta
like,
do it. Do the dance.
Before I was running all press, you know, as the gatekeeper, you know, making key decisions, doing all this cool stuff, I crawled through some mud. You know, you gotta crawl through that mud, you know? And
totally.
The weird thing to me is I've never heard of this band, Stars in Stereo, that are opening for Flyleaf. And that yet, for some reason, they have Flyleaf's publicity team, who are a very expensive California, you know, the big California PR firm. I'm like, so no one's ever heard of you, yet you have this expensive publicist. So I go to do the interview. I interview Stars in Stereo. They have this giant, amazing tour bus. And I mean, this tour bus is amazing. And like, it has brand new car smell. That's how nice it is. And I even asked them, I'm like, and the band, they have this very like LA vibe, the LA vampire kind of like, they just look very LA. And I'm like, I asked them, I'm like, you guys aren't even signed. How the fuck do you have a tour bus? Because, you know, you might not know, but a lot of your favorite bands, like, you know,
they're
unless
broke.
They're really successful, they don't have a tour bus. You know,
they're broke.
Drive. Bands, you know what I mean? Or a successful band will have your standard regular tour bus, which is, you know, dining room in the front, bunks in the middle, lounge in the back. They had the upgraded version of what a successful band would have. So I was like, y'all are suspect, you know what I mean? But when I asked them how you have a tour bus, they just kind of laughed it off. And I was like, you're suspect, you know what I mean? I'm on to you.
Uh-huh.
And after I interview Flyleaf, I'm hanging out at the bar at the venue with Jared from the band, and we're talking about like video games. I think we're talking about Mass Effect. We're just like laughing it up, having a good time. And he asked me, the guys from the Stars and Stereo band, they walk by to go do sound check, and Jared's like looks at them and looks at me. He's like, so what do you think of them? And I'm like, oh, thank God. I'm like, dude, what's up with your openers, man? He's like, yo, they got a bigger tour bus than us, man. And dude, when we stop places, like, they stay in hotels, you know, like nice ass fancy hotels. Like, these are, you know, they got a lot of money behind them. And I'm like, dude, that's fucking crazy. And we're laughing about it because they're not that good of a band. They were actually terrible.
Uh-huh.
But he looks at me and he's like, you know, I'm not even supposed to say this, man, but I'm going to tell you, the guitarist of this band is Dr. Phil's son.
No fucking way.
Phil McGraw was the... I think it's Phil, not Phil McGraw's son. I can't remember his name, but he was the guitarist of the band, and Dr. Phil was fucking funding this band and getting them on tour with Flyleaf.
Oh my God, dude! That's a story, dude. Like, so, let's call up AP right now.
Dr. Phil has his hooks in the scene. You know what I mean? That was my point.
Oh my God, dude! What kind of band? What did they sound like? Were they a pop punk band?
They were going for rock radio, you know.
Okay.
They were pretty garbage.
Dr. Phil's son used to be in a rock band.
Yeah, Dr. Phil's son had a band, and Dr. Phil was funding it and giving them all this fucking money.
I'm about to fucking run that shit, man.
My friends started their own label. It's called 100 Kid. Actually put out the Coheed, that last Coheed record.
That's wild, man.
Isn't it? Yeah. Now they're broken up and it doesn't matter. But yeah, Dr. Phil's son. That was my little story.
That is wild. What a rabbit hole. You never know what lines are going to cross.
Definitely.
That's crazy. I love that shit.
Did you... Poppy also performed on Corden this week. Did you see that?
I did not. I did not see that one. But I have an idea on how it went. How did it go, Matt?
Well, I got a question for you first. Okay, so Diplo, right?
Right.
Are we sure he's good?
I mean, he's got songs. He's got a couple songs. I mean,
was it all Skrillex though, or you know what I mean? Is he as good as he is projected to be?
I don't think he's as good as Skrill. No.
Because you know he gets a lot of cred. You know that. I mean, that Jack used it. I mean, that was it, right?
Oh,
and Bieber,
dude.
And they basically invented a genre. You know.
Yep. 100%.
But so his label, Mad Decent, obviously Poppy's signed there, and his label, they seem to get her so much more than Island Records got Poppy, you know, as a concept. Like, Poppy is more of an anime robot, and she's not a tropical antichrist. You know what I mean? Like, you think of a low life video.
Totally.
And just Island Records didn't understand. And I love Poppy. If you have not, if you're a listener of the show and you don't know who Poppy is, I highly recommend you do the YouTube dive on Poppy. I just, I loved this performance. She's just, she's so incredible. Like, she gives that Poppy side glance during her performance. You know, that side look. She gestures as a robot so well. And that's literally how they push Poppy. She's this character. She's a robot. And, like, even if you don't like, you know, her music, or you don't know Poppy, if you were in the audience for Corden, like, what a show she put on. It was just this robotic, futuristic fucking masterpiece. I think she's just like, Poppy's the best concept for an artist, and they just can't
get it to happen, man.
She's such a great character. She's objectively, like, the most beautiful girl on the planet, you know, that aside. And they just can't get it running. Island couldn't do it. Mad Decent doesn't seem to be doing it. You know, her single Mashi had momentum on the Pop Rising playlist, and her, like, little genius lyric video for it went kind of mini viral just because how weird and fun she is. Uh-huh. But it's just not happening.
It should be primed, man. It should be primed and ready to. I have not liked a Poppy song since American Kids off the first EP.
You played Time Is Up, which is the new single. What do you think of that song?
It's just, it's not there for me. It's like that 888 stuff. It's like those songs are coherent, but, like, it's they're missing the spark, man.
What do you score?
Like a 6 out of 10?
Okay, I'm at a 7 out of 10. I've come to enjoy it. Like, it's remained on my Spotify. It's still checkmarked. It is lightly checkmarked. Any day, but, like, it's growing on it. And watching her perform it live, where she just really owns the full robotic thing, and I want to exterminate the human race.
Uh-huh.
Man, she's just incredible. I really want it to happen, man.
I do too, but we've been wanting this to happen since what? Like, fucking 2016? Like, she's had multiple shots. I don't understand what... It comes down to the music. That's what it is. The image, the narrative, everything's there. I just don't get what the roadblock is with her not having a hit. Like, just get her on some fucking, you know, Closer Part 2. Like, just die it closer, that, and then just roll with that momentum.
I love the character, but enough sure. Poppy. What do you know about this Ronnie Radke roast, Tyler Sharp?
I don't know much, man. I just,
did you write a story about it?
No, we didn't post about it. It's so.
I mean, you down? You dig?
I mean, I'm not gonna go, but, like, I'll watch some videos from it. But I feel like it's gonna be, like, kind of weird. It's genius for him, because he's gonna make a shit ton of money off this. Plus, he's got a book coming out.
That was the crazier part of the story. The Ronnie Radke book, dude. Like, do you think Downey wrote it?
Oh. I don't know.
Downey, right?
I don't know. I don't know if he would write that.
Downey would, man. He helped Andy write his book from Black Veil Bride.
Andy's a little different than Ronnie. Putting your name on something with them.
Ronnie and Downey are tight. Oh, I got to hit up Downey now. I'm curious. Why wasn't I hit up to write this? I'm the one that can write the book on this guy. I literally did over a series of articles. Come on.
Right? Yeah. Where's that check at?
But that was supposed to be my check.
But yeah, I mean, I'm gonna buy the book. I'm gonna buy the book. But I,
oh hell yeah, I you gotta read the Ronnie Radke book.
Right. Anytime there's a book written about a scene, bro, we gotta read that shit. But
I mean, this could be like Dirt.
This could be the Motley Crue book, man. This could be it. Yep. I don't think anyone's ever gonna make a movie about Ronnie though.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's not that interesting. Whatever. I was more stoked on the book. There's a Ronnie Radke book coming out. That's cool. There's a roast. Who knows what it'll be, but, you know. Whatever.
I don't think he's going to be able to take it. Like, I don't even think. He can't take criticism.
He'll attack
someone. I mean, he can't fucking.
Throw a mic stand,
no,
right?
He can't throw any more mic stands, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be weird to see, because, like, people are going to come at him with, you know, domestic abuse jokes, and he's gonna be like, "Yo, I was acquitted." You know, like it's a tough thing.
I feel like the questions are gonna.
The things he gets this for are things he didn't do. He didn't murder anyone. You know what I mean? But like everyone calls him a murderer. You know?
Right. So. Yeah. I think the questions are all gonna be vetted beforehand, and it's gonna be like this super like sterile environment.
That's the fucking point.
I know, that's my thing. It's like, what's the point if it's just going to be a sterile environment? But you know it's not going to be just flamboyantly, you know, whatever pops off, whatever fan asks whatever question, because then everyone's going to start. Remember in like fucking 2012, 2013 when he was spitting on kids and throwing kids out of venues on that Icy Stars tour? That's what this shit's going to turn into.
I do. So, all right, Tyler, let's move on to our pop story, because I know this is what you've been waiting for.
Cool.
Eminem responded to MGK's diss track, which we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. Why don't you walk me through this, homie?
So Eminem dropped he responded to MGK's Rap Devil diss track with a song called Kill Shot. And the artwork, first off, I mean, the artwork is literally MGK's face with eyes X'd out in a scope of a rifle. Like, it's literally a kill shot. Like, he's going right for him. There's a lot to unpack here. And I was worried about him going after MGK because, right, like, MGK is such a small fish to fry for Eminem. Eminem put, like, 20 people in body bags on Kamikaze. Yeah. You don't need to respond to it's like the Paul skit. Like, what are you gonna do? You're gonna respond to everyone on the next album or on like tracks and shit? Like, this feels very unnecessary. That being said,
it's like how everyone in the world knows who Pete Davidson is, now everyone in the world knows who MGK is.
Right. That being said, I love how much of a moment this was. Like, literally he tweeted it out within 10 minutes. It had like 15,000 retweets on it. Like, it was so viral. It was ridiculous. Like, everyone was losing their shit. And now, that being said, the song's not good enough. And that's the biggest problem. Like, Rap Devil, people actually are listening to that song because they like the song. I don't think anyone's going to be listening to M's diss because they like the song. It's not coherent enough. He doesn't bring enough fire. He brings the fire lyrically, but like his bars are very, at the beginning he gets way choppy, like revival-y choppy, and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? We just got over this with Kamikaze. Like, all you have to do is bring like 2 minutes of just bars. That's literally all you have to do, and just out rap him. That's it. And then you leave it in the dust. That's all it takes. Now MGK's doing a fucking EP response to him. Right. You know, like, it's this whole thing now, and I'm just like, no, this is not how it should have been. So I wanted him to bring more fire on Killshot than he did, as far as the, you know, foundation and the structure of the song goes. But he does have some liners, man. Like, he's got quite a few zingers. Like, the biggest one I saw quoted probably was, "I'd rather be 80-year-old me than 20-year-old you," because MGK was talking about how M's pushing 50 on his track, and he's like, "Last time you saw 8 Mile was at home on a treadmill," and all this shit. Yeah, there's a M did his homework, that's for sure. Name dropping Lil Tay, you know, he goes all over the place.
That was a below the belt move for sure.
Dude, he's out there, and I like that. Yeah. I just wish the song was better.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it?
You know, thinking about Rap Devil, like, I like the MGK. I like the pitch correction glitch in the chorus. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually kind of dope.
Right.
I think it actually makes the song better. On the MGK diss, Halsey gets caught in the crosshairs there. Totally. Which is, you know, I wonder how she feels about that. You know, and that's sort of the diss about he's going to go fuck Kim. And the specter of Kim Mathers forever lives over Eminem. You know, we're still talking about Kim in 2018.
We're still talking about Kim.
You know, I think after I listened to these two tracks back to back, and I think MGK has the better disses, but a worse delivery and execution of said disses. M shouldn't have replied.
Right.
All of his disses, my thing is, they're too obvious. And it's, I'm a way bigger white rapper. And also, I'm bigger than you. and I'm considered the GOAT. That's pretty much most of his disses on this track. And it's just, it's so obvious. It's like, what else can he really say? This is only good for MGK, who right. sounds way more eager. Like, he knows how much he has to gain from this, and he's totally. He's like stepping up, you know? And M's line, you know, my greatest flops are your biggest hits. And that's a great line, but it's like, yeah, we know. You know, it's kind of like
right.
pointing out the obvious. We all know MGK is nothing commercially compared to M. And, you know, it was a weird... I think M leaned a little too heavily into... I'm bigger than you. Like, imagine if Drake had done that, you know, against some of his opponents. It's not, you know, Drake didn't need to do that against Meek Mill, to body Meek Mill, you know?
Right.
MGK took a shot and came out with a W, in my opinion. You know, for having one of the 10 most famous men on the planet write a diss song about you, mm-hmm. you know? He's got the Motley Crue movie coming out. He's playing Tommy Lee. And he had a number one hit with Camila Cabello. He dated Halsey. He's entering a new level of celebrity. And, you know, this is just seems to all be working out for MGK. And this only distracts from Kamikaze for M, which I think for that reason, it's a net loss for M.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, totally. I said it on the last episode. If he was going to do anything, if he was going to drop some sort of Lucy diss, he needed to give MGK like 3 lines tops.
Yeah.
You know, like that's it. You go after other people. Like, you don't that's all he's worth to M. Instead, we got a full fucking track, and it's I don't think the song's good enough.
Last night, apparently, I'm reading, it looks like there was a fight.
I saw that.
You saw that? It looks like MGK's crew beat the shit out of a guy.
Because he's
movies.
Yeah,
he called him a coward for using Eminem's family in
right?
this song.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah,
he might
I
go
mean,
to jail.
Like, it's
somebody's going to jail,
right?
I got the shit kicked out. I mean, that's crazy. The beef's getting real. It's bullshit. To me, the point is this beef is useless. Like, it's good for MGK, but
yeah.
you know what? Son and dad need to just get along and get that collab with Halsey on the hook. How about that? There we go,
no,
right?
Dude, M went after Halsey in his, man. Like,
M versus MGK versus Halsey on the hook. I'm in.
No, dude.
Let's all get along. Let's all be against G-Eazy, because that needs to be stopped.
I mean, dude, that Halsey line in M's diss is, whew, that's wild. Yeah. But he just needs to leave them all
what
behind.
What is it, like, Balls Deep in Halsey or something?
Yeah,
like that.
Young Gerald.
I mean,
man.
Truth though. You know,
Young Gerald. Yeah.
Did you see that G-Eazy 2 is like, yo, Em, let's do this.
What's
like,
good, yeah. man? What's
he's
good?
Like, yeah, he's like, yeah, he's all, dude, he's all about, you know, being on the right side of Eminem history.
I mean, he kind of went 8 Mile on the Kim. You know, bringing Kim back into the situation where he's yeah. like, you know, well, I can't remember exactly what he says, but...
Go ahead.
No, totally.
I don't care about he, Kim.
Like, he says, yeah, he's
I don't
like,
go, Kim, you know?
Like, go do it in my flannel. I'll give him my sandals because he knows as long as I'm shady, he's going to live into my shadow. I mean,
okay.
It's just like, all right, but like, you could fit 100 other rappers in that shadow too, you know? Like,
we get it, Big M.
Right.
It wasn't worth it. He should have ignored
MGK.
Like now MGK like, has all this momentum, and
I know, like, this is so
Eminem got nothing. He literally got nothing except
right.
the Sway interviews.
yeah.
Can I just say my favorite part of the Sway interview was when, because most of it looked pretty rude. This is the new thing, right?
Oh, it's so ridiculous.
You don't go to Rolling Stone and have them interview you. You have your own team set up an interview, and you offer a journalist the opportunity to come in and interview on your terms, right? We saw,
right.
like,
all
Kanye did it with Charlemagne.
Questions
you know, this is
are
new,
vetted, and it's all fucking
thing,
planned.
Right? So
and,
M does
yeah.
this with Sway, but my favorite Sway thing was Sway asked M, yo, how'd Jesse Reyes get on the record? And M just got real awkward for a sec, and then he came up with some excuse, but I
right.
think we all know how Jesse Reyes got on the record, and we know what's going on there, because have you seen Jesse Reyes?
I have not. I actually had no idea who she was until I heard this record.
She's something, man. She's a little, it's kind of stunning.
All right.
It was just funny, the look on his face. The one moment he looked like he got a little tripped up.
No, totally.
Jesse Reed's got the record.
Yeah, he's like, no, yeah, I was coming back from L.A. one time, TV, and I was like, oh, my God, who is this girl?
No, he did the same shit with Skylar Grey, played it off like there was no relationship, but we found out there was.
Totally.
Yeah. Anything else, C-Sharp, you want to add on this?
I don't think so. I'm going to go back and listen to Kamikaze and pretend that this one didn't happen.
All right. That is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, send them in to notescene@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, please, please, please go rate us on Apple Podcasts right now. Go give us 5 stars and we'll love you. See you next week.